Just William Six by Richmal Crumpton. Read by Martin Jarvis. That boy. William had gone away with his family for a holiday, and he was not enjoying it. For one reason. It was not the sea. William found things monotonous inland. There were no crabs, no rock pools, and nothing to do. Robert and Ethel, his grown-up brother and sister, had joined a tennis club and were out all day. Not that William had much use for Robert and Ethel. He preferred them out all day, as a matter of fact. "All I say is," he said aggrievedly to his mother, "that no one cares whether I'm having a nice time or not. I might just as well be dead for all the trouble some people take to make me happy." His mother looked at his scowling, freckled countenance. "Well, dear," she said, "you can go for walks."
"Walks," said William. "It's no use going for walks without Jumble."
His father lowered his newspaper.
"Your arithmetic report was vile," he said. "You might occupy your time with a few sums. I'll set them for you."
William turned upon his parent a glance before which most men would have quailed. Then, with a short and bitter laugh, he turned on his heel and left the room. He put his head in at the window as he went towards the gate.
"I'm going out, Mother,"
he said, in a voice which expressed stern sorrow rather than anger.
"All right, dear," said Mrs. Brown sweetly.
"I may not be coming back, never," he added darkly.
"All right, dear," said his mother.
William walked down to the village in black dejection. What people came away for holidays for beat him. At home there was old Jumble to take for a walk and throw sticks for, and various well-known friends and enemies to make life interesting. Here there was, well, he might just as well be dead. A motor coach stood outside the post office, and people were taking their places in it. William looked at it contemptuously. He began to listen, in a bored fashion, to the conversation of two young men.
"I'm awfully glad you ran down," one of them was saying. "To tell you the truth, I'd got so bored that I'd taken a ticket for this coach trip. Can't stand 'em, really."
"Will they give you your money back?" said the other.
"Oh, it doesn't matter," said the first.
Then he met William's dark, unflinching gaze, and said carelessly,
"Here, kid, like a ticket for the coach trip?"
William considered the question. Well, this was better than nothing. "All right," he said. "I don't mind going." An hour later, the coach stopped at a country village. The driver explained that the church was an excellent example of early Norman architecture. This left William cold. He didn't even glance at it. The driver went on to remark that an excellent meal could be obtained at the village inn. Here, William's expression kindled into momentary animation, only to fade again into despair. For William had spent his last tuppence that morning upon a stick of licorice. It had caused a certain amount of friction between himself and his elder brother. William had put it, partially sucked, upon a chair, and Robert had come in from tennis and inadvertently sat down upon it. Being in a moist condition, it had adhered to Robert's white flannel trousers.
"Well, I didn't make him sit down on it, did I? He talks about me spoiling his trousers. Well, what about him spoiling my licorice? All I say is, who wants to eat it now he's been sitting on it?"
Robert had unkindly taken this statement at its face value and thrown the offending stick of licorice into the fire. William sadly extricated himself from the coach. An elderly lady in pince-nez looked at him pityingly.
"What's the matter, little boy?" she said. "You look unhappy."
William merely smiled bitterly.
"Is your mother with you?" she went on.
"Nope,"
said William, thrusting his hands into his pockets and scowling still more.
"Your father, then?"
"Huh," said William, as though bitterly amused at the idea.
"You surely haven't come alone?"
William gave vent to the dark emotions of his soul.
"All I can say is that if you knew my family, you'd be jolly glad to go anywhere alone, if you was me."
The lady made little clicking noises with her tongue, expressive of sorrow and concern.
"Dear, dear, dear," she said. "And are you going to have tea now?"
William assumed his famous expression of suffering patience. "I've got no money."
"Haven't they given you any money for your tea?" said the lady indignantly.
"Not they,"
said William with a bitter laugh.
"They wouldn't have let me come if they'd known. They wouldn't have paid anything for me. It was a friend gave me the ticket, just to give me a bit of pleasure," he said pathetically. "But they wouldn't even give me money for my tea."
"You poor child," said the lady. "Come along, I'll give you your tea."
"Thanks," said William humbly and gratefully, trudging off with her in the direction of the village inn. William, generally speaking, had only to say a thing to believe it. He saw himself now as the persecuted victim of a cruel and unsympathetic family, and the picture was not without a certain pleasure.
"I suppose," said the lady uncertainly, as William consumed boiled eggs with relish, "that your family are kind to you?"
"You needn't suppose that,"
said William, his mouth full of bread and butter, his gaze turned on her lugubriously.
"They surely aren't cruel to you?"
"Cruel," said William with a shudder. "Cruel just isn't the word."
The lady leant across the table.
"Little boy," she said soulfully, "you must tell me all. I want to help you. I go about the world helping people, and I'm going to help you. Don't be frightened. You know people can be put in prison for being cruel to children. If I reported the case to the Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Children..."
William was taken aback.
"No, I wouldn't like you to do that. I wouldn't like to get 'em in trouble."
"Ah," she said, "but you must think of your happiness, not theirs."
She watched, fascinated, as William finished a third plate of bread and butter.
"I can see you've been starved," she said, "and I could tell at once from your expression that you were unhappy. Have you any brothers and sisters?"
William put half a cake into his mouth before replying.
"Two," he said briefly. "One each, grown up. But they just care about nothing but their own pleasure. For instance," he went on, warming to his theme, "this morning I bought a few sweets with just a bit of money I happened to have, and he took 'em from me and just threw 'em into the fire."
The lady made the sympathetic clicking sound with her tongue.
"Dear, dear, dear," she said. "There's generally only one explanation of an unhappy home. I've investigated so many cases. Does your father drink?"
William nodded sadly.
"Yes," he said. "Yes, that's it."
"Oh," breathed the lady, "your poor mother."
But William wanted no divisions of sympathy.
"Mother drinks too," he said.
"You poor, poor child."
William wondered whether to make Robert and Ethel drink too, then decided not to. As an artist, he knew the value of restraint.
"Never mind," said the lady. "You shall have one happy afternoon at any rate."
She took him to the village shop and bought him chocolates and sweets and bananas and a top. William found some difficulty in retaining an expression suggestive of an unhappy home life, but he managed it fairly successfully. He began to feel very tired on the way back. He had had a lovely time. He was almost asleep when the coach drew up at the post office. Everyone began to descend. He took a polite and distant farewell of the elderly lady, but he found that the elderly lady was coming with him.
"Where do you live?"
she said.
Said William vaguely. Just somewhere along here."
"I'm coming to see your father,"
said the lady in a determined voice. William was aghast.
I wouldn't do that if I was you," he said.
"I often find," she said, "that a drunkard does not realize what unhappiness he makes in his home. I often find that a few words of warning are taken to heart."
You'd better not," said William desperately. He don't mind what he does. He'll be just mad drunk when we get in. You'd better not come near our house."
"No, no, I shan't feel that I've done my duty till I've at any rate tried to make him see his sin."
They were in the street now in which William's family was staying. William looked pale and desperate. He was creeping cautiously and silently past the house by the side of his unsuspecting companion when a shrill cry reached him.
"William! Hi, William! Where have you been? Mother says come in at once.
It was Ethel, leaning out of an upstairs window. Sadly, he opened the garden gate.
You'd better not come in, he said faintly to his companion. He gets violent about this time of day.
Mr. Brown looked up from the evening paper as his younger son entered, followed by a tall, thin lady of prim appearance wearing pince-nez. Mr. Brown groaned inwardly. Had William killed her cat or merely broken one of her windows?
Good evening, he said.
Good evening, said the visitor. I have been spending the afternoon with your little boy.
Oh, very kind of you, murmured Mr. Brown.
He has told me something of the state of things in his home, burst out the visitor. I saw at once that he was unhappy and half-starved.
Mr. Brown's jaw dropped. William, very slowly and cautiously, tiptoed to the door.
He told me about you and his mother. I was sure, I am sure, that you don't realize what your failing means to this innocent child.
Mr. Brown raised a hand to his brow.
Ah, your conscience, you see, said the visitor triumphantly. Your conscience troubles you. Why should the memory of childhood mean to that dear boy blows and curses and unkindness, and just because you are a slave to your baser appetites?
Mr. Brown removed his hand from his brow.
You'll pardon my interrupting you, he said, but perhaps you would be good enough to give me some slight inkling of what you're talking about.
Ah, you know, you know, she said fervently. Why pretend to me? I have had the dear child's company all afternoon and know what he has suffered.
Here Mrs. Brown entered and the visitor turned to her.
And you, she went on, you, can't you, won't you give up for the sake of your child?
Her voice quivered with emotion.
I think, my dear, said Mr. Brown, that you'd better send for a doctor. This lady is not well.
But who is she? Said Mrs. Brown.
I don't know. She's someone William found.
The lady flung out her arms.
Won't you? Can't you? Can't you, for the sake of your own happiness as well as his, give it up?
They stared at her.
Madam, said Mr. Brown, despairingly, what do you wish us to give up?
Drink,
she answered dramatically. Mr. Brown sat down heavily.
Drink?
He echoed. Mrs. Brown gave a little scream.
Drink,
she said.
Drink? But we're teetotalers.
It was the turn of the visitor to sit down heavily.
But surely, she said, surely that boy did not deceive me.
Madam, said that boy's father bitterly, it is more than probable.
When the visitor, protesting, apologizing, and still not quite convinced, had been seen off the premises, Mr. Brown turned grimly to his wife.
Now, he said, where is that boy?
But William had quietly slipped away, having decided that going for a walk, even without Jumble, wasn't such a bad idea, after all.